Cybersecurity, E-Week, and baseball. It's all on Tennessee Tech Today this week. Hello, everyone. I'm Buddy Pearson, the News and Communications Director. Thanks for joining us here on Tennessee Tech Today, where we take an in-depth look at what's happening with students, faculty, staff, research, and events on campus. Well, cybersecurity is on the minds of government officials all over the world, and one person they want to hear from regarding cybersecurity is Tennessee Tech Computer Science Professor Amberine Siraj. The director of Tech Cybersecurity Education Research and Outreach Center, Siraj, spent 2 days recently speaking at the Global Cybersecurity Forum in Saudi Arabia before testifying to the Subcommittee on Research and Technology, House Committee on Science, Space, and Technology in Washington, D.C. So I know it's been a very busy week. You travel to Saudi Arabia for a cyber conference, then you go to Washington, D.C. and testify before Congress. Let's start with the conference in Saudi Arabia. How did the invitation come about, and what was it like going and talking to folks there that was a global conference?
Yes, so it was a global conference in a global cybersecurity forum. You can find it in globalcybersecurityforum.com. I don't know how they found me, but I got an invitation from their representative of King Khaled and their governor of National Cybersecurity Authority to be there. And then, you know, at first, you know, I didn't even know if it was legit because, you know, there are a lot of spam emails. But, you know, after repeated inquiries, I figured out they were legit. And I told them, you know, if I am one of your 300 speakers, you don't really need me. I'm so busy. I have so much to do. And they said, no, we really want you to come. You're not one of our 300 speakers. We need your help on especially diversity issues and cybersecurity education, workforce development. So anyway, so after all that, I decided to go. So I was there for just 2 days, not even 2 whole days, but 2 days, and I did the forum and came back. So I was part of a panel on diversity in cybersecurity, and also I talked to leaders in National Cybersecurity Authority to see how we can have bright cybersecurity students come to Tennessee Tech for graduate school. So we talked about that. So, I mean, it's all in very preliminary stage, but I feel that it has opened up opportunities to collaboration on, preparing their graduate students. Maybe in faculty development and training, and also on, especially with the VCs, nonprofit organization that started from Tech, about how we can help with their women empowerment in cybersecurity agenda, which, by the way, so their prince, I'm sure you can look up the name. It's in their website. You will see that Prince has declared 2 initiatives, one on digital safety for children and another one on women's empowerment in cybersecurity. So they're very serious about it and they're investing a lot, and we will see if and how we can help them with it.
I know you went over there to kind of give them your knowledge, but was there anything that you learned after being over in Saudi Arabia and maybe that you could bring back here to Tennessee Tech?
I think, you know, what was most striking to me is the problem of stereotyping. You know, when I went there, I was thinking, you know, especially since women there were black abaya, I was thinking I'm going to find that it will seem like they're oppressed and I have to give them pep talk. It was totally eye-opening for me that those women in black abaya make up 46% of their computer science workforce, which is, and students and which in United States is only 20 to 25%. Our program has 13% female in computer science. Their program has 46% female in computer science. I'm told that their workforce, STEM workforce, and their digital workforce has half of them are women. And I saw that in the forum. There were so many women there, and they were very encouraged, and they seem like, you know, they're ready to take on challenges. And even I had a comment from one of the audience member who was in our panel. She said, you know, your panel was so empowering. I just wanted to get up from right middle of the panel and start working. And but it was a very, they were very humble folks. And I don't know what's going on, if the scene is any different behind the screen, but what I saw in the forum, it was very encouraging to see the young men and women coming together and taking on this challenge of cybersecurity. And they're willing to work with the world, not just us. I mean, that's why a representative from the whole world was there.
Yeah. You didn't have a whole lot of time to come back and rest. You were all on a plane to Washington, D.C., where you went to testify before the Subcommittee on Research and Technology, the Committee of Science, Space, and Technology. What was that like, and what was that invitation for?
So that was, I received that from the congressional staff about, I formally got the invitation just the day my series of my travels started, so I didn't have much time to work on this. I literally started to work on the testimony on my way back from Riyadh, and the testimony was for Congress. The main goal was to hear from the public, and they chose panelists from academia, from industry, from government, from nonprofit organizations, and they were polling us to see, you know, what are the main issues that Congress should take on to invest in developing cybersecurity workforce. I don't know if you know this, there are 3.5 million jobs that will go unfilled as predicted by next year. Wow. Worldwide, not just US.
Yeah.
Worldwide, 3.5 million jobs that no one is going to take if things don't change. We are not predicting things will change drastically in 1 year. Mm-hmm. As we speak today in USA, there are more than 500,000 jobs that are open, that are looking for cyber people. Supply to demand ratio is 20%. So every 10 jobs, there are only two of them are going to get filled. Mm-hmm. And in Tennessee right now, there are more than 5,000 jobs that are open in cyber.
Wow.
So it is a big problem. And if you just use your common sense to think about it, our lives are so much integrated with technology. Like, just close your eyes and think about where is tech.
Right.
It's everywhere. It's it's in our critical operations of the nations, in everything, education, finance, banking, health care, your day-to-day life, it's everywhere. And it's just going to exponentially increase. So wherever there is tech, there is always the prospect of abusing tech.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a prospect because people are abusing tech.
Right.
So how do we use tech as we expect to use them? And that's where cybersecurity comes in. We always think, and that's something in my testimony, that I think one of the issues that Congress should invest on how to change the public image of what cybersecurity is.
Mm-hmm.
Because we only hear about when bad things happen, when there are attacks, when there are breaches. We don't take the time to think about that the reason you were able to order your books from Amazon or you're about to pay your bills online, mm-hmm. that level of comfortableness that's coming because of the fact that there are thousands and thousands of cybersecurity professionals who are working day and night to make it possible.
Yeah.
And if they were not working behind the scene, our society will be at chaos. So cybersecurity has a big societal impact. And if we as public understand that, I think more people would feel motivated to come to this field.
Yeah. What do you think it says for you personally and for Tennessee Tech to be recognized, to be able to go to Saudi Arabia, to go to Capitol Hill and testify before Congress, that, you know, to me it says a lot about our program and the work that you've done right here at Tennessee Tech.
It says a lot, like you said, it says a lot about our program. I think, you know, one of the staff who invited me for the panel, and I asked him, why did you select me? And he said that because you are doing a lot of the things in education, workforce development, diversity, you guys are touching a lot of critical areas. Mm-hmm. And this center and Tennessee Tech, through CROC, the Tennessee Tech is working on a lot of different things. We are working on, of course, our flagship. You know, cybersecurity education is based in computer science department. Mm-hmm. And I think we have an excellent department that is doing a lot to educate students in computer science. The three areas of focus that we have are the three most important things in computer science, which is cybersecurity, data science, and high-performance computing. So being a student at computer science at Tennessee Tech, a student is getting an opportunity to learn about the three most important areas in computer science. And of course, cybersecurity has the highest enrollment. Mm-hmm. Since we started, it has quadrupled in 4 years. Mm-hmm. And through CROC, CROC was founded with the emphasis that we are going to work on education, we are going to work on research,
right.
and outreach. Mm-hmm. So our programs in all these three are getting attention, not just nationally, internationally. So that's why I'm very proud of Tennessee Tech. And, you know, I always tell people, our students are the gas, you know, they keeps us running. Mm-hmm. And we have just wonderful students that, I even said that in my opening statement, I closed it.
Yeah.
I couldn't help to say how our students are so humble and hardworking, and because of them, that makes Tennessee Tech so great.
More Tennesseans are turning to the state's best public university, Tennessee Tech. Tech produces bold, fearless, confident graduates who get an outstanding return on investment, who graduate with the least amount of debt in the South, who earn higher early career salaries. Tennessee Tech, just like our state, is soaring to greater heights. Tech is Tennessee. To find out more, visit tntech.edu/techistn.
Welcome back to Tennessee Tech Today. Students in the Tennessee Tech's College of Engineering will put their intellectual and physical talents to the test the next few days during E-Week, held annually. E-Week is a competitive week of fun, food, and games among Tech students majoring in chemical engineering, civil and environmental engineering, computer science, electrical and computer engineering, general and basic engineering, manufacturing and engineering, technology, and mechanical engineering. Joining us to tell us more about E-Week is Manny Gumbin, a junior chemical engineering major and the president of the Engineering Joint Council. And Manny Gumbin joins us now. He's the president of the EJC, and E-Week is always big. It's huge for engineers on campus. How excited are you that E-Week is here?
Oh, well, buddy, we're really excited. Engineering Joint Council has been hard at work for the past month and a half, and We're super excited. Departments have been emailing us with questions, and that just shows that everyone's interested more than ever. So we're ready to go.
Now, are there any changes as far as eWeek this year?
Yeah, so one thing we're really excited in highlighting is the water bottle raft racing. As many know, in the past, we have done cardboard canoe. You know, in today's world, the environment's important, and we really want to emphasize recycling, you know, reuse, reduce, recycle. And as engineers, we want to be able to reuse things as much as possible, too. So this change this year is our water bottle raft racing, where about a month ago, we had informed every department to go ahead and start recycling water bottles in advance. And once Monday comes, they'll put together their rafts just with duct tape, and we'll see which department can really race to the end and win the first event of eWeek.
Now, eWeek always culminates with the banquet on Thursday night. That's always a great way to wrap it up. What is it? What's your favorite thing about eWeek?
I think it's the friendly competition that exists between all the engineers. I'm fortunate enough to have many different friends throughout the department, and it's nice to see all of us under one roof. Just celebrating the idea that we are all engineers. Of course, like, this major is tough. It's not for everyone. However, what's really unique and really passionate is, like, once we're all under the same roof, we're just going to cheer on our own departments and just really celebrate the reason why we are engineers.
For you personally, as the president, what exactly does your organization do on a regular basis, and what do you do as the president?
Yes, so Engineering Joint Council, our big mission statement is to coordinate and culminate all the joint activities in the engineering departments. We really ask all the different engineering organizations to send us a rep. And within our meetings, we talk about what's going on in each of the engineering organizations. So if they need help with any of their events or need more manpower, EJC has all these reps that can send them out there. And also just sharing ideas and seeing how other engineering organizations can schedule other events through them. One thing we're really trying to do this year with Engineering Joint Council is to really put emphasis on the joint part, meaning join not just with other engineers, but join with the community, join with other majors, and put other projects together. And a little sneak peek, Engineering Joint Council is working on a service project coming around the spring season. It'll be focusing on helping those affected by the volcano in the Philippines. And more details to come, but we are super excited to launch it. But, of course, eWeek's the main goal as of right now.
And as a chemical engineer, is chemical engineering going to win eWeek?
You know, I keep on telling all my friends that I do need to remain unbiased. But I will say, with all the questions I'm getting and with all the hype I'm hearing from the other departments, I'm really hoping there's more competition this year than ever. I'm always rooting for my department in my heart, but we'll see. We'll see that Thursday night. Well, who will be hoisting a choo-choo at the end of that evening? So we'll see. We'll see, buddy.
All right. Manny Gumbin, who is the president of the EJC and is a junior chemical engineering major. He also minors in business management. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, buddy. I appreciate it. Have everyone check out eWeek. Also follow Tennessee Tech EJC's Instagram account. We'll be having a lot of highlights there. But in the meantime, wings up.
When the world is moving this fast, boldness is rewarded. At Tennessee Tech, we help you find your bold. We'll help you turn it into a career-ready education. That's Tennessee Tech. Bold futures begin here. tntech.edu/visit.
Tech today. Well, the Steve Smith era begins on Saturday, February 15th for the Tennessee Tech baseball program. The Golden Eagles were supposed to open the 2020 campaign on Valentine's Day, but the inclement weather pushed back the debut of Tech's new head baseball coach. We caught up with Coach Smith last week as he prepared for opening day. And joining me now is the new Tennessee Tech head baseball coach, Steve Smith. And Coach, Cookeville is kind of a far way place from Baylor and Auburn. How in the world did you find Cookeville and Tennessee Tech?
It ain't that far away. I've been in Starkville, born and raised in Mississippi. So, my mom and dad, I wasn't around for it, but they went on their honeymoon to Chattanooga and Lookout Mountain. And I think every vacation we took when I was growing up, it came through Atlanta and usually turned left and went to the Smokies or – you know, that this part of the country is not foreign to me. Now I've got a Texas girl that I married 36 years ago. And, you know, right after we got escorted out of Waco, the first place we went, we put all our stuff in storage, and I brought her to Pigeon Forge, and we stayed in a cabin in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee for 2.5 months. And it was during that time that Melinda came to realize that she had not grown up in the South. She thought she had in Texas, but she hadn't. I brought her over here first thing I could. As soon as we got out of Waco, we came to Tennessee. So it's, you know, providential, I think, that we're back here now.
You know, you come in at a time where you don't have a whole lot of time to get ready for the season. So what are some of your priorities right off the bat?
Learning names. Yeah. You know, it's not ideal for anybody. I mean, nobody wants to have what happen and have a change, you know, mid-year. It's not good for players. It's not good for, you know, administrators. It's not ideal. It's not ideal for Auburn. You know, I left a really, really good pitching staff in the middle of a year. They've got to go find somebody. But, you know, we don't all get to control those kinds of things. And when I came in here the day that I came in to interview, and the one thing that I think people would understand is that when you go into an interview process, both sides are getting interviewed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, clearly I was asked a lot of questions and I had some questions, but more than my questions, I just had observations. I just was looking, you know, and just observing. And it was a very thorough process. I mean, it was well laid out. I mean, it was a 6:30 in the morning to 6:30 in the evening process. And about 4 o'clock that afternoon, I was taken into a room that had 8 players in it. And again, it's December the 18th. And so finals have been over for 4 or 5 days. And here these guys are still here, still on campus. And that number of players doing that spoke to me right away. And then just the appearance of them. They were all buttoned up. They looked sharp. They were in their travel shirts. They just looked good. You know, the first impression was, I don't know what I expected, but I was impressed with it. And then we sat down, and the next thing that really spoke to me was just their preparation. They had done their research. They, you know, it's a very flattering thing, I think, to be Googled. And, you know, these guys had, you know, they had done their homework, and they had questions, and they had comments. And, you know, they could have easily, and I've told Mark, you know, when you engage that many people and different groups in a process, that's a risky thing to do. You know, I mean, you're opening up all your closets. You know, you're letting people come through every part of your house when you do something like that. And usually, you know, something can very easily go wrong, but it really didn't. It never did. And the players were definitely the highlight of the day. I just, you know, we had a good conversation. I could sense their love for this program, the fact that they were there, their unity amongst each other, and their respect for each other. And that was, you know, that was really the thing that sold me the most.
Obviously, Tennessee Tech's 2 seasons removed from winning a regional, going to a super regional, getting a lot of publicity, having a lot of those guys go on to get drafted and have careers in the minor leagues and some players in the major leagues. That has to be attractive to, you know, any coach out there who's looking for a job.
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely Matt Braga proved multiple times, you know, that Tennessee Tech could win in baseball in the OVC. And so that's not – you know, and that's step one. I mean, you definitely want to be in a place in a league where you feel like you can compete, and there was no question about that. You know, to me, I was on the outside looking in 2018, and I watched it, and having been at Baylor as long as I was and as many times as I've been to Texas and actually pitched there, I knew what that was like. And I also knew that Texas would have trouble with them. You know, there's a different, you know, if I can say this, there's a different breed of cat here. I mean, these are hard-nosed kids, and I've played against teams like this everywhere I've ever been, and it's just not the kind of teams you want to play. And particularly when you get in that situation where you've got so much on the line. And you know, the thing that I've wondered about, though, and I wondered about this as I was going through the process here in deliberation, I really hoped that the community and the university, you know, maybe got their appetite wet for something really cool, you know, because they did. They got so close. They got a game away. And, you know, you put it in terms of college basketball. I mean, they're in the, you know, they were in the Final 16, the Sweet 16, if you will, you know, and just, you know, a bloop single away probably from being in the Final 8. College baseball has never afforded institutions as much exposure as it does now. And so, you know, there's just so much opportunity for a baseball program to be of value to a university and to a community that maybe, you know, 20 years ago wasn't quite as great, you know, but there's so much coverage now. There's so much access to video and to coverage and TV and whatnot that I really hoped, and I sense that it has been, that the appetite has been wet, and that maybe we can garner some support and do some things here that push us over that edge.
You're a little over a week away from your first game. I mean, between now and then, besides learn some names, you have some other priorities that you want to work on?
Well, you know, let me say this. First of all, Mitchell Wright and Garrett Walters, you know, are still here, and they were here. They've been here. Mitchell's been here, I think, going on 4 years now. Garrett's going on his second year. And these guys did a great job, you know, in the aftermath of just kind of holding the fort. And I really think the impression that was made on me during the interview, I really probably have to give a lot of credit to Garrett and Mitchell both for, you know, just making sure those guys did, you know, were ready. And so having said that, you know, we came in here. I brought one guy with me, Cooper Ferris, who I've known Cooper for a long time. He's a retired junior college coach in Mississippi, but coached many, many summers in the Cape and in the Valley League, and has been his family's Kingston or Kingsport, which is it? It's a Kingsport, yeah. His family's Kingsport, and he's worked with the Mets there for a while. And you know, he's that veteran set of eyes that has been used to going into situations where he just has players for a week and they start playing. That's typically what happens in the summer. And so he seemed like it would be an ideal fit for this situation this spring, give me a chance to, you know, assess what we really need to do and make more of a permanent hire, you know, when we get to May and June. But we've tried to change as little as possible in terms of communication stuff and how things were being done. You know, the fall is when you put a lot of that stuff in. And so I've tried to keep it as simple as possible. And, but I'm telling you, the players have just been like sponges and have been so receptive to us and coachable to the nth degree. We've been, the weather's an issue. You know, the playing surface combined with the weather is an issue. Fortunately, we've got the indoor facility, and I would say to you that is an incredible facility that any place I've worked would be proud to have, and it has been a savior for us. Even as we speak right now, we will be in it again later today and probably the next couple of days. So we've only been on the field for inter squads, I think, four times. That's, you know, what you're trying to do there for me is just get some kind of a feel for what kind of players you have, get the pitchers prepared. You know, you're actually building up, you know, arms and stuff and trying to get them ready. And there's not a lot of time to do that, even when everything goes perfect. So that's what we're trying to do. And I feel pretty good. I feel pretty good even after four that I've got a handle on, you know, who the 9 or 10 guys are that are in the lineup. I think I've got a fairly decent feel on the top 6 or 7 arms. We need more than that, and we've got some guys I think that have the potential to creep up into that group. But I think really, all things considered, it's gone really well.
Talking with Steve Smith, the new Tennessee Tech head baseball coach, what are your expectations, your realistic expectations coming into the season?
Good question, and honestly, that's the question I've asked of the two coaches that have been here. You know, I remember when I came in on the interview, I asked those two guys, I said, what do y'all think? You know, what's your, after seeing it last year and going through the fall, and they both felt really good about us offensively. And having seen us now here for a couple of weeks, I agree with that assessment. But you know what? I bet you if you went through the OVC, maybe every single coach would say that. This has always been known as an offensive league, and Tech is maybe not the most offensive ballpark in the league, but it's got to be pretty close, based on the elevation and the prevailing winds and that kind of stuff. So I do think we'll be able to compete offensively. My concern is like most everybody's on the mound, and just particularly early in the year, will we be in shape that our better guys will be able to go deep enough into a game? You know, how are we going to manage that? The schedule is very interesting. It looked like to me a schedule that was made by a guy that knew he wasn't going to be around to play it. I mean, it's more road games than home games. It's eight what has become known as Power Five games. When we've second week of the season, we're playing at NC State. That's who we played at Auburn 2 years ago in an NCAA regional. We got three over there, and then we get to go to Vandy and Kentucky and Georgia Tech and who else? Duke. We go back to Duke later on. So we've got eight, you know, on the road in that league or in the Power Fives. And, this league has always been, except for that 1 year in 18, has always kind of been known as a one-bid league. And so, honestly, if that holds, if that is in the case once again this year, then your season is kind of a two-part season. Your one part is definitely you're trying to win the league. Right. I mean, there's no question about that. So the weekends are big in terms of winning the league. The midweeks, honestly, you want to win every one of them. You go out there and play, but scheduling wins during the middle of the week is probably not as beneficial to you long term. You know, once you get out of the OVC tournament and get to NCAA play, you certainly don't want that to be your first experience, you know, playing at a higher level. So that part of the schedule I like. I think that makes sense to me. I just wish I'd like to play more at home. This wear and tear on people is tough when you have to travel like that.
Well, Coach, certainly congratulations on the job. Welcome to Cookeville and Tennessee Tech, and looking forward to some great baseball this season. And that's going to wrap up Tennessee Tech Today for this week. Be sure to check out the T2 website at tntech.edu. Check us out on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Until next week's show, be bold, fearless, and confident. Wings up, everybody.